getting closer and closer. This is that weird donut hole week between Super Bowl week when all hell breaks loose and just kind of waiting for the Pro Bowl. Are we waiting for the Pro Bowl? We'll watch the Pro Bowl. We know we'll watch the Pro Bowl because the ratings for the Pro Bowl are higher than they are for every other all-star game out there. May not be any better, but we'll still watch it. We'll be talking more about the Pro Bowl later in the week. Because the big news of the day, you know, every day I'm kind of like, what are we going to talk about in the show? And some days it's like, well, there's really nothing good to talk about. And then out of the blue, Saints coach Sean Payton is reinstated by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. And there were some strange vibes going on with this whole thing. It looked like Roger Goodell was going to wait as long as possible. Originally, the suspension was to run through the Super Bowl. And at one point, someone from a network with four letters reported that there would be no action taken whatsoever on the Sean Payton suspension until after the Super Bowl. And that seemed a little bit odd because the thinking all along has been, look, the NFL is going to descend on New Orleans for Super Bowl week. And even though Roger Goodell isn't going to be out walking the streets and up and down the French Quarter, he still has to be there. He's going to encounter people there. And usually what happens is people complain about Roger Goodell either privately or they'll boo collectively. But when he's one-on-one with people, he never has a bad experience. Well, I think there's some concern that maybe in New Orleans, who knows what'll happen? Who knows what someone will say to him when they get him face-to-face, especially after that free Sean Payton T-shirt from a few weeks back during the regular season. Anyway, wisely, the NFL has reinstated Sean Payton before the Super Bowl week begins. I guess we could have seen this one coming. It makes sense. You don't want to go down to New Orleans with the Sean Payton reinstatement issues still pending, especially because the offseason for 2013 has begun. You could argue that the 2013 season has begun. Aaron Cromer, offensive line coach, left to become the offensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears. So you've got to replace Cromer. How do you replace Cromer if you can't even talk to your head coach about who your head coach would like to hire? Doesn't make any sense. So it was hurting the Saints' preparations for 2013. It was overdue. It should have happened right after the regular season ended. But 2-3 weeks, what has it been? It's been 3 weeks. 3 weeks late, better late than never, better now than after the Super Bowl. Sean Payton is back. And I think I can disclose that we'll have him on Pro Football Talk live from New Orleans. Not PFT live, but the NBC Sports Network version of the show, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Central. Got to get that Central time zone down pat because I think I'm going back into it for a week. But we'll have Sean Payton, Eric Casilis, and I'll talk to him next week. But a lot of work needs to be done to get ready for 2013. They want to close the book on 2012. At times they were competitive, at times they weren't. And who knows how much of it gets blamed on the whole Bountygate fiasco, which almost is over. And for anybody out there who is cynical about the timing of this, the easy piece of evidence to point to is Greg Williams, who's currently unattached. Well, technically he's still the Rams defensive coordinator, but there's no reason to believe the Rams are going to keep him because they fired his kid. Greg Williams still hasn't been reinstated, and the fact that there's been no action on Greg Williams suggests that there really was a strategic component to this from the standpoint of the NFL going to New Orleans next week. One team that isn't going to New Orleans, although they go there every year, the Atlanta Falcons. And I'm sure Saints fans are happy that their arch rivals aren't coming back to New Orleans, although there would have been an opportunity for airport workers to throw eggs at the Falcons bus if it had come to that. But we talked yesterday about the AFC side of things, the Patriots and the Ravens, and there's still some issues with the Atlanta Falcons that need to be addressed. You blow a 20-point lead and a 17-point lead in consecutive weeks in the postseason. How does that happen, and what do you have to do to fix it? Well, the obvious answer is that the Falcons' defense is lacking that killer instinct. How do you not build a lead like that and hold that lead? Now, I know the NFL is looking a lot like arena football at times, but that's in part because of the quality of the defenses. When you don't really have an impact player in your front seven other than an aging defensive end who had a bad ankle, how do you expect to take advantage of that sense of urgency that the other team is going to be feeling when they're down 17 points or the prior week down 20 points? There wasn't that clampdown from the Falcons' defense that we have seen from other teams who built big leads. And that's why it's not all that common to see leads like that squandered. And to see it happen in consecutive weeks tells me there's an issue with that Atlanta Falcons' defense. Whether it's in the front seven, there isn't somebody who can get to the quarterback consistently and close the deal when there is a big lead. there was a lot of a failure to wrap up by the defensive backs. And I know that's a more common phenomenon in the NFL, but when you've got a big lead and you're bouncing off guys instead of getting your arms around them and bringing them down and allowing a guy to get in from the 5-yard line, score a touchdown instead of having an opportunity for a goal line defense that can maybe hold a team to a field goal, that's a problem that needs to be addressed. And I also think that the Falcons have real question marks. It's easy to say tight end because Tony Gonzalez apparently isn't coming back, but at running back, is it Michael Turner? Is his time done? Is it Jacquizz Rodgers? Is there someone else that can really bring some punch to that running attack and take advantage of the fact that everybody's going to be obsessed with stopping Roddy White and Julio Jones, one of the best young receivers in the NFL right now, on his way to being one of the all-time greats based upon the way he has performed his first 2 years. But you got to take advantage, just like with Adrian Peterson in Minnesota, where's the pass game to take advantage of him? In Atlanta, where's the run game to take advantage of all the attention that's going to be focused on the passing game? So a lot of issues for the Falcons to work through as they move into another offseason of disappointment. The reality is 31 teams. This isn't like college football where you got all these bowl games where people can feel like, hey, I had a good season. You got one team that's ultimately happy with what happens. You got 31 teams that are upset and they're disappointed and they're trying to find ways to get more. And for the Falcons to have 5 straight winning seasons, get to one conference championship game, not get to a Super Bowl yet, that sense of urgency is only going to increase. We'll see what kind of changes they make in the offseason. One change that could maybe help the Atlanta Falcons get ready for all the mobile quarterbacks they face is to add Pat White to the roster. And yes, Pat White, you may have forgotten the name, one of the great quarterbacks in West Virginia University history, just up the road, 30 miles from me. He was a 4-time bowl winner, not just 4-time bowl participant at West Virginia. He was a second-round pick of the Dolphins in 2009. And he was kind of the Tim Tebow of the Tony Sparano Wildcat offense in Miami. He was even more scarce in 2009 than Tebow. He was 0-for-5 passing. Tebow was 6-for-8 this year. And Pat White had 21 rushing attempts in 13 games. Tim Tebow had 32. But with this trend toward mobile quarterbacks, will we see the guy who flamed out after one season in Miami? It was really punctuated by a concussion that he sustained on a hit from Mike Taylor of the Steelers. It looked like a fairly routine hit, and it was helmet to helmet. But that kind of created a sense that maybe this guy isn't big enough. Maybe he isn't durable enough to make it at the NFL level, and he's really not much bigger than me, about 5'11", 190. Is that really big enough to play quarterback in the NFL? And he's kind of lean. You know, Russell Wilson, even though Russell Wilson's not real tall, he's kind of got that football look to him. Pat White looks more like a baseball player, and he was a great baseball player. But is Pat White really ready to make that commitment? He got a $2.4 million signing bonus back in 2009. He tried to play minor league baseball. That didn't work. He was with the UFL for a little bit of time in 2011. That didn't work out. He's 26 years old. He's got a lot of mileage. No, he's got a lot of tread left on the tires. Not much mileage on the tires is what I was trying to say. Maybe Pat White, when you consider how the needle is moving toward mobile quarterbacks, you've got 90 spots on an offseason roster. Does it make sense? Because, look, everybody's going to be looking for the mobile quarterbacks coming out of college. Maybe there are guys out there who aren't currently in the NFL that could play the role. Not just to look for a guy that you want to be your quarterback, but to have a guy who can run your scout team when you're getting ready to face Colin Kaepernick, Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, the mobile quarterbacks. Maybe Pat White is a guy that can create a niche for himself both in practice and then maybe whether it's a wildcat package, whatever the case may be. He was a great college player. He was unstoppable at times in that read option attack that Rich Rodriguez ran at West Virginia and then later Bill Stewart in Pat White's final year. Maybe there is an opportunity for Pat White. We'll find out. He wants one. We'll see what happens as the offseason continues to unfold. As the show continues to unfold, we'll be joined by my good friend and Football Night in America colleague, Rodney Harrison. I don't know if he regards me a good friend, but I'll call him a good friend. He'll be with us segment two. And then another good friend and colleague, Matt Maiocco of CSNBayArea.com. We'll talk a little 49ers. We focused more AFC yesterday. We're going to twist a little more NFC today, although Roddy Harrison played for the Patriots. We've got to see what he thinks about the current state of that franchise, and we'll do that after the break. This is PFT Live.
And in nutshell, we just didn't make enough plays. We played hard and we had our chances. We just came up short.
But, you know, tonight we just didn't do enough things well enough to win. Give the Ravens credit. They're a good football team. They just outplayed us and outcoached us tonight. And that's pretty much the story.
No postmortem on the New England Patriots 2012 season can be complete without hearing from a guy who won a couple of Super Bowl rings with the New England Patriots. It was a while ago, but the Patriots continue to be an elite team. They just can't kick the door in. And now joining us to help us understand what happened and maybe talk a little Falcons, maybe talk a little other topics around the NFL, our good friend Rodney Harrison from Football Night in America. How are you, buddy?
Mike, I'm doing okay. I was crushed when my Patriots lost.
I thought you're supposed to be objective.
Mike, I caught you. See, I even called you Mark. I am objective. I'm gonna tell you exactly. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna tell you exactly why they lost. Doesn't mean that my feelings wasn't hurt.
Why'd they lose?
Because the Baltimore Ravens came in and just beat up, physically dominated the Patriots. And I would have never thought, Mike, that was something that was going to happen to a Patriot team. You were given home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And for Baltimore to come in to just physically dominate you, out-prepare you, outplay you, and basically out-coach you, it was just very surprising to me.
But what was there a moment where it turned for the Patriots, or was it just kind of systematic? The Patriots were up 13-7 at the half, but then 21-0, they were outscored in the second half. Was it just halftime adjustments? Was there a turning point? What did you see that made you think that this just went the wrong way for the Patriots?
Well, the Patriots had some opportunities in the green zone. They had opportunities in the red zone, and they didn't convert. And you almost saw that the whole – just the momentum was starting to change. And really, you know, you saw Wes Walker drop a key third down. Tom Brady had opportunity down the field to make some plays. And you're just looking at the Patriots, their body language. And you saw the Ravens just starting to gain momentum, starting to get some confidence in the second half. You saw that offense of the Ravens just open up, and Joe Flacco just started making plays. And you know, Bernard Pollard, his hit on Ridley really just set the tone, and then I started getting worried. And you know what? The Baltimore Ravens just came out and played. They know they can beat the Patriots. They felt like last year they should have won and been in the Super Bowl, and it was just a team that's not afraid of the New England Patriots.
How much of what the Ravens are accomplishing in the postseason do you think comes from the Ray Lewis retirement? Because they really limped to the finish line in the regular season. They seem to be a different team since Ray Lewis told his teammates this is it for him. He's done after this postseason run.
You know, and that's what Ray Lewis brings. He brings that emotional charge, and guys have a lot of respect for him. It's no different than, you know, somebody that you've grown up with, you kind of look up to, it's kind of your role model, your big brother, and you want to play hard for him. But I also believe that Ray Lewis instilled in these guys, like, look, guys, these are teams we can beat. We didn't look overly impressive during the regular season, but who cares? We're here now. We played against Peyton Manning. We've had some success to a certain degree, and then we couldn't finish against Peyton Manning. Then you finally go up to Denver. We beat them. Then we go out to New England. This is a team we know we can beat. And just emotionally, you saw, like, Jim Caldwell, you know, calling a different offense, involving Ray Rice more, allowing Joe Flacco to kind of do his thing. And this defense, man, with Dean Pease, former defensive coordinator of the Patriots, former defensive coordinator of my team, he was just phenomenal with the game plan that he came up with.
You mentioned earlier a Wes Welker drop, and there was a drop on a key third down play. But every time there's a Wes Welker drop, you look at the throw, and the throw wasn't as accurate as maybe it could have been. You don't see Welker on those drops being hit in stride like Joe Montana used to hit Jerry Rice in stride. At what point is it fair to ask whether or not Tom Brady is as good as he used to be?
Well, I think, you know, we've become so spoiled with Wes Welker and Tom Brady, because Wes Welker, he makes Tom Brady look probably a little better than what he is, and Tom Brady's great. But Wes Welker, he has the ability to make so many tough catches, hold on to balls after getting hit, and sometimes I'll scratch my head and say, how the heck did he hold on to that ball? But, you know, I think you have to have that. You have to have great receivers. You have to have great people catching balls, making plays for you, because these quarterbacks, they can't always hit a guy's stride. They can't always make the perfect throw. But if I'm looking at the Patriots, I would almost have to say that that window of opportunity is closing with Tom Brady, because he's getting a little older now. He has family, he has different priorities, and quite frankly, everyone's catching up. I mean, teams are getting better. Teams are very competitive. They're hungry. And you almost have to question, after having so much success for so many years, how much more hunger can you have out there each and every year?
What do you think happens first? Tom Brady decides he's done playing football, or the Patriots decide they're done with having Tom Brady playing football for them?
No, I think Tom Brady's going to still play at a high level for at least the next, you know, three years. I can say at least 3 years. And even if Tom Brady begins to really slide, I believe he walks away. He's not one of those guys. I don't believe that, you know, if he knows that he can't play anymore, that he'll continue to hang on. But I still believe he has a really high level in him, all pro type level in him the next 3 years. But I really think it comes down to really having balance throughout that team. We saw the Patriots, a much improved team defensively, but I still believe, Mike, on the other side of the ball, they have to get a legitimate pass rusher to get to the quarterback. They have to get a little more speed at linebacker, and I think they need an enforcer at the safety position. Those guys running the tight end and wide receivers running across the middle, they're not afraid of getting hit. They need someone like a Pollard to really make a statement, set the tone, and really make them fear coming across the middle. They don't have that.
You used a key word during that description of Tom Brady's skills. You said slide. Got to ask you, on that slide where a foot went into the leg of Ed Reed and Ed Reed was tripped up, you saw it, you're objective, you can set aside your relationship with Tom Brady. You think that was a clean play or a dirty play?
You know what? I don't know, man, because really Tom doesn't have a history of doing anything funky like that. But you saw after the slide, it's kind of like his leg went up. And normally in a slide, your leg stays closer to the ground. It's almost like, as a quarterback or as any running back, why would you want to put your legs in the air? I don't know, but I don't know even why the Ravens are making such a big deal of it. You beat Tom Brady, you beat him up, you've physically manhandled the Patriots, you won, you're in the Super Bowl. Why are you still focusing on this? You should be focusing on San Francisco, preparing yourself for an exciting up-and-coming next 2 weeks.
Which quarterback would you rather have, Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco or the guy who leads the team in your adopted hometown of Atlanta, Matt Ryan?
Wow. You know, I've always liked Joe Flacco, and you know, I've just always liked, you know, his calmness, his skill, and kind of what he brought, you know, early on when he came in. And he wasn't talking about himself being a elite quarterback. I think once he got over the whole thing that I don't get respect, I should be considered an elite quarterback, and he kind of calmed himself down and stepped away from that, he became the quarterback that we most people anticipated he can be, a very solid quarterback. I still don't believe he's an elite quarterback, but I believe he's a very good quarterback, and he's getting better as the playoffs and as the season have progressed. So I believe it would be Joe Flacco at this point in time, and not just because he's winning football games, but the way he's conducting himself and not losing football games.
Matt Ryan's Falcons blew a 20-point lead against the Seahawks in the fourth quarter of a divisional playoff game, came back and won thanks to Matt Ryan, blew a 17-point lead against the San Francisco 49ers. What's wrong with this Falcons team that they can't show that killer instinct? You get a big lead, you got to hold that big lead. What do they need to do to avoid blowing these leads in the future?
Well, I think this is a really tremendous learning experience for Mike. I believe that, you know, when you're not used to having success on the playoff level, you almost get to a point where you get to a scary point where you're like, oh my goodness, is this for real? Are we really up 20 to nothing? You get to a point where you've never been. You're in a situation where you're uncomfortable because you're not used to being there. And, you know, it's different from the regular season compared to the playoffs, because in the regular season, you always got another week. In the playoffs, you don't. So I believe they surpassed their comfort level when they were in the playoffs, and they didn't know how to handle that success. And I believe that's the biggest difference. I think moving forward, you know, if they add a couple of additions, you know, because they have some gaping holes in this team. But if they add a couple additions, they could be a pretty good team for the next 4 or 5 years. I still believe that Matt Ryan, he has so much potential to get better. And, you know, obviously you got to find someone, which is almost impossible, to replace Tony Gonzalez. But he needs a really good tight end to come in and try to take his place.
You think there's any chance they talk him into coming back? He hasn't said 100% yet. He's gone from 95 to 97. When we, and everybody, I know how everybody feels this time of year. It's been a long season. They're ready to take time off. When we get to July, August, do you think he changes his mind?
Well, I think, really, this is what I believe. I believe Tony Gonzalez is going directly into TV. I believe someone promised him a nice contract to come in and do television. And they're telling him, well, Tony, if you decide to play again, you may not have the same opportunity, you know, to come in and have this television job. But I believe if the Falcons come in and say, look, Tony, we'll pay you $10 to $12 million. I mean, that's something, and say, hey, you can practice whenever you want to practice. Don't worry about it. That might be something convincing enough to say, you know, for Tony to say, hey, you know, or he might say, hey, I got enough money in the bank. I'm looking forward to the security of a nice television job, a nice studio plus job, kind of what you have, Mike, you know, where you don't do much. You just make a lot of money and, you know, kind of cruise into the sunset.
I like how you tried to make it about me, because you realized as you were explaining how Tony Gonzalez is thinking, you were telling your own story of how you came to decide to retire, that you knew that seat at NBC wasn't going to be there if you played another year.
Not true. You know what, that's not true, because really Tony's a little different than me. Tony's a Hall of Famer. I was just a little weasel that kind of lucked up on the job.
Well, that's good. Great stuff, buddy. I look forward to seeing you down in New Orleans. We're going to have a good time down there. Thanks for taking some time today, and we'll talk soon.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike. Take care. Bye.
All right, buddy. Rodney Harrison, great guy, great friend. Is he still on the line? I don't want to say those things if he can hear them. Okay, when we come back, Matt Maiocco, CSNBayArea.com. We'll talk some 49ers. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live.
Anytime you win a game like this, it's a team effort. Everybody does a little, it adds up to be a lot. You know, there's one built by any one person.
Yeah, we fought as a team, O-line, you know, our coaches. And we deserve it. We deserve this, baby. Let it go, baby.
I hate how they put those big T-shirts over their pads. They look like the Frankenstein monster when they do that. That's just an observation that has absolutely no connection to anything we're talking about. But why not take your pads off and then put the T-shirt on? Just something about that giant T-shirt that bugs me. Anyway, nothing about our next guest bugs me. Matt Maiocco, CSNBayArea.com. Covers the 49ers, going to New Orleans with a pretty extensive itinerary of practices and press conferences. And how you feeling about everything that's gone on with the team this year? First time back in the Super Bowl since 1994.
Well, you know, after the lost in the championship game a year ago, just seeing how they approached the offseason. I remember just the first time being out there, and it might have been in early May, and you could just sense that everybody was working for this purpose right here, to get to New Orleans, to get to the Super Bowl. And guys like Justin Smith, you know, talking to his teammates daily about, you know, in the NFL, that window doesn't stay open very long, and you got to take advantage of it. And don't put yourself in a position where at the end of the year you're looking back and saying, man, I wish I'd worked harder in April, May, June, and July. And right then I thought, I have a feeling that this team is going to be going to the Super Bowl. And like any team, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster. There's going to be some questionable decisions, maybe by the coach, or at least controversial decisions, such as the move at quarterback. But looking at it and seeing the kind of character on the team, and obviously Jim Harbaugh knows his team as better than anybody, and for him to make that call, and there's absolutely no controversy now. That was the right call, and the team is benefiting from it.
And Nationally, there was a lot of criticism of Jim Harbaugh. I was one of the ones who didn't criticize him for the reason you just explained. He's in position to know how Colin Kaepernick works. He drafted Colin Kaepernick at the top of round two. Alex Smith was a guy he just inherited, and he made the most out of him. And I think one of the reasons why we didn't see Kaepernick sooner was because Jim Harbaugh was able to get the most out of Alex Smith. But what was the mood locally when this went down? Was there anxiety? Was there criticism? What did the fans feel? What did the local media feel about this switch from Smith to Kaepernick?
I would say any time Alex Smith is involved in anything in the Bay Area, it's roughly a 50-50 split. You know, whether it's, I mean, it's anything. It's, do people feel good about Alex Smith? Yeah, about 50%. That seems to be, you know, it fluctuates a few points when the team's going well, and dips a few points when the team's not going well. But I think everybody saw that this was a very risky move because Alex Smith was playing the best football of his career. I think Alex Smith is a kind of a given. You know he's not going to make bad decisions. You know, game manager, all that stuff, but ultimately it's the other people on the team who will decide the game in a lot of cases. Now, he rose up and had a heck of a game against the Saints last year in the playoffs, but for a team that was built on defense, a lot of people thought that it was a risky move because Kaepernick, you're not exactly sure what you were getting. Well, what's made this move so impressive is that, yes, no question, Colin Kaepernick has the physical skills. He can open up the entire field with his arm and his legs. But Kaepernick has also given you the above the shoulders game that Alex Smith gave you. The great decision making, poise, everything that he's brought to the table has really enabled this team to take it that next step and go to the Super Bowl.
Is it a foregone conclusion now, Matt, that Alex Smith will be traded or cut by the 49ers when you consider how much he's making? Colin Kaepernick's getting the minimum third-year salary next year, can't renegotiate his rookie contract until after the 2013 season. Is Smith just a luxury at the backup position they can't afford?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be guaranteed $7.5 million if he's on the roster on April 1, and the total salary would be $8.5 million. So, I mean, there's no way the team can bring him back at that number. Then it becomes a situation of, yes, I'm sure they'd love to trade him, get something for him. Then it sort of falls onto teams around the NFL. Do other teams around the NFL, a quarterback-needy team, see him as an $8.5 million a year quarterback? So if no team believes that, then the 49ers will have to release him.
And a guy who isn't under contract for 2013, and I have a feeling what happens in 12 days will go a long way toward deciding whether or not he retires, Randy Moss. Is the expectation that if the 49ers win, he just walks off into the sunset with the Lombardi Trophy and says, I'm done, see you later?
That would be my expectation, yeah. I mean, I think that he's done a remarkable job, and I have absolutely nothing negative to say about Randy Moss and how he's conducted himself in that locker room. He very well might be the most popular guy in that locker room. But, you know, it's got to be a bit of a blow to his ego, you know, to see that he's not the guy. He's, what, less than two catches a game. Yes, he had some big plays in the game against the Falcons, but, you know, at his age, he's not going to be getting any better. The 49ers have some young guys. I'm not sure they're totally set at that wide receiver position. Personally, I think that, you know, Randy Moss has served his purpose this season. I don't know what he could add to that next year. I would think that, I know he said early in the season, the Super Bowl ring's the last thing remaining on his resume. So I would think that if the 49ers win it, I think there's a pretty good chance we've seen the last of Randy Moss.
Now, we haven't seen much of Randy Moss during the season when it comes to media availability. He doesn't always seem to comply with the requirements of one midweek availability and also postgame. How's he going to deal with Super Bowl week where it's mandatory and you've got to be there and you've got to talk and you can't just say I'm not talking and walk away? How do you think he's going to react to that?
That's a great question. I'm wondering about that myself. He's a guy that I've talked a lot to during the course of the season, and rarely have we talked about football. You know, he's an interesting guy, an engaging guy. I really enjoy talking to him, but when the subject turns to, you know, his role on the team or just, you know, football in general, he doesn't want to talk about that stuff. And, you know, there were just a handful of times throughout the course of the season when he did talk, and when he talks, he has a lot to say, and he's very good in front of the media. But as he told me early on, he hates the media, and so I don't know if he'll just take the fine and not talk every day, or if he'll just sort of grit his teeth and work through it. But I'm looking forward to seeing how he reacts to it, and then if he does talk, like I would expect that he would, hearing what he has to say, because the guy has a lot to offer. And it's been quite an experience being around him and watching him up close, and I know a lot of the players, pretty much all the players, feel the same way. Every day you see a stream of guys, young and old, going over and talking to Randy Moss, and like I said, he's probably the most popular guy in that locker room.
I'm not real good with logic sometimes, but if Randy Moss hates the media and you're a member of the media, how is it that you've been able to talk to him so much this year?
Well, because we talk about other things. We talk about his hometown. We talk about, you know, the family. It's other things. I mean, it's funny. I mean, he told me early on, you know, that he hated me, and I said, "Hey, why do you hate me? You don't even know me." And then he said, "Well, let me rephrase that. I hate the media." And we had a nice little exchange about that, and I just kind of kept going up to him and chatting about things. But like you said, the line is drawn a little bit when it's talking about football, and you know, most of the stuff we talk about, nothing sensational, is stuff away from the football field. He's a big sports fan. He loves to swim. I remember during the Olympics, I asked him what Olympic sport he thinks he could have excelled at, you know, not just the basic sports, but something a little bit offbeat. And his answer to me was springboard diving. And sure enough, you see him walking through the locker room every day with goggles and a swimsuit. He's made swimming for training a vogue in the 49ers locker room.
Now, has he ever given you any insight as to why it is that he hates the media? He's been around the NFL a long time. I don't sense that the NFL media has ever been unfair to him. I mean, Terrell Owens should hate the media a lot more than Randy Moss does. What's your sense on why he feels that way?
Well, I think that he feels like everything that he has done through the years, it has been blown out of proportion. I know he feels like he's completely misunderstood, especially with the whole, you know, the fake mooning episode, that there was a lot of background to that story that he doesn't think that people really understood, such as the way fans at Lambeau Field typically greet the opposing team as the buses roll in. And that was kind of, he felt like that was having fun, and for it to be something seen as you know, untoward or completely classless. He has a very good sense of humor, and I think that kind of showed up there, but it was completely taken the wrong way. I just think that he feels like he's probably been kind of in the bullseye of, you know, anything that happens through the course of his career. And certainly, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff that that he hasn't done very well as far as the public is seen. You know, all that stuff is blown up. So I think that's why he feels that way.
David Akers has been in the bullseye more recently, missed a field goal attempt in the game on Sunday. He's the guy going forward. Billy Cundiff, by rule, can't come back. There's plenty of other kickers out there. Why are the 49ers sticking with David Akers?
Well, there might be plenty of other kickers out there, but nobody that I'll think the 49ers would trust to put in that kind of situation. And certainly, you know, they can't have a whole lot of confidence in David Akers now, but I think if you were to bring in some guy who, you know, wasn't good enough to be on one of the 32 teams during the season, and then you look at, you know, some of the other names that have been crossed off the list with late season pickups who are no longer available, such as Nate Kading, Ryan Longwell, and Billy Cundiff as well. I think the 49ers feel like, you know, they're so far down on the list now that they've come this far. Let's just try to make it through with David Akers. And, you know, there's a little history there, of course. You know, David Akers, nobody made more field goals in the last regular season in NFL history than David Akers. You know, he had the 63-yarder in the first game this season. But then you keep going this year and or this season, and you look at nobody had more missed field goals than David Akers. He was hitting the ball well on Sunday. I know Jim Harbaugh was watching his every move in pregame. David Akers had some good kickoffs. I'm not sure that the Falcons even had a kickoff return in that game. And I think the feeling was that he struck the ball well, just missed it. And that's a departure from the last game of the regular season where he wasn't striking the ball well. So I just feel like, you know, at this point, 49ers have come this far. They like I said, there can't be a whole lot of faith in David Akers, but I think what faith they have is more than what they would have in somebody they just bring in cold from the outside.
And there'll definitely be a lot of focus on David Akers if there's a key kick at any point in that Super Bowl. And really, every kick is a key kick when you get to the Super Bowl. Matt, you're going to be getting to the Super Bowl soon. We'll see you down there. Appreciate your time, and have a great day.
All right, Mike. Thank you very much.
Matt Maiocco, CSNBayArea.com. I almost said when we return. We don't return until tomorrow at noon. So I guess technically that would have been right. When we return tomorrow at noon, we'll have a show. I can't tell you much more than that, but I know we'll have a show. Until then, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Pro Football Talk on NBC Sports Network and around the clock. Is that the way it works? Around the clock. I just need to shut up. ProFootballTalk.com. See you tomorrow. Have a good one.